Chris Oberbeck, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer at Saratoga Investment Corp, is here, and we're talking about why business development companies may be in the sweet spot for today's rising rate environment. This is The Navigator. Welcome to The Navigator, where we talk about all-weather active investing and plotting a course to financial success with the help of closed-end funds. The Navigator is brought to you by the Active Investment Company Alliance, a unique industry organization that represents all facets of the closed-end fund industry, from users and investors to fund sponsors and creators. If you're looking for excellence beyond indexing, The Navigator is going to point you in the right direction. And today, it's pointing us in the direction of Chris Oberbeck, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer at Saratoga Investment Corp, which is a business development company. And I said we're going to talk about why BDCs are in the sweet spot. That's not necessarily like a big honking commercial, go look at his BDC. But if you want to, SaratogaInvestmentCorp.com is the website. Chris Oberbeck, it's great to have you back on The Navigator.
Thank you.
First off, when people are talking about this rising rate environment, I want to make sure that they understand the business development company structure and why you think that's particularly good right now for the assets that you're buying. So in other words, we need a little bit of an explanation of the business and how it works so that folks understand why this is a good time.
Sure. A couple of things. I guess, by and large, most business development companies' assets are senior or second lien loans, and generally they're priced on a floating rate basis. So it would be a LIBOR plus a spread. LIBOR plus 5, LIBOR plus 7, depending on what kinds of risk profiles and leverage are involved. So on the asset side, the assets float. So as rates rise, the base reference point of their assets also rises. So the assets increase as the interest rates increase. So that's number one. And you contrast with that, if you were to own a high yield bond fund or something like that, you know, if rates go up, their rates don't change. They're all fixed rate instruments. So the floating rate aspect of the assets of a BDC is the number one most important element as to why a BDC is a good vehicle in a rising rate environment. The second piece is the liability side. Different BDCs are structured differently. Some BDCs might have a floating rate asset cost. So at the worst case, you'll be doing a spread business. So the assets would rise and your liabilities would rise, but the spread would remain. So you'd still be earning a spread. You don't get squeezed. Certain other BDCs, like ours, Saratoga, for example, most of our liabilities are fixed rate. We have 5 to 7 to 10 year fixed rate liabilities. So when rates rise, the assets would go up in value, but the liabilities stay the same pricing point. They're at the same interest rate. And so we have an increasing spread in a rising rate environment. So at the heart of the matter, that's why a BDC is a very good instrument and a very good place to be in a rising rate environment like we have coming right now.
Is there kind of a flip side? I mean, if this is a notably good time to be in BDCs and somebody says, yeah, I want to go in that direction, is there another time where they go, okay, and when conditions change, this might be when I'm looking to see where the exit signs are?
The main time for an exit sign is probably, you know, in a radical across the board, you know, economic decline, right, of credit, you know, a huge credit downturn. But barring that, right, in other words, as long as companies are in good shape, the economy is in reasonable shape, which in an inflationary environment, generally speaking, they are, it's not like a huge recession, right? It's an inflationary environment with rising rates. The underlying businesses are going to do fine. So you have to make sure that the credit quality underlying all the loans that the BDC is making is intact, you know, in a rising rate environment and a falling rate environment. But that spread business, right, that idea that the assets float and go up and down, that same spread when rates come down, yeah, depending on the liability structure, right, you could get a decreasing spread. That's true.
So if I heard you correctly, what it really means is that the first couple of rate hikes really aren't going to wind up affecting the company. I mean, they may affect the credit quality, but they're not going to affect my earnings as a shareholder.
Again, this is all a question of degree and sort of a very fine inside baseball kind of analysis. But basically, most of the senior loans, you know, they have a LIBOR spread. And sometimes, and actually most of the time, the LIBOR itself is a threshold. So LIBOR might be 1.5%, for example, and LIBOR is less than that. So if LIBOR, it has to rise to 1.5% to get to the floor before it starts increasing the value of the asset base. So the first 25 basis points of rate increase is probably not going to make as big a difference as the next 75 basis points, if you will.
That's what I thought I heard.
Yeah.
Let's then bring into the underlying assets, because at Saratoga, you guys are lending to middle market companies.
Correct.
Why middle market? And has the middle market been differently impacted by pandemic recovery, the things that we're looking at, than other parts? Because we know if we're looking at like the S&P 500, it's the biggest of the big that have been driving that. But that's not your market. So how is your market positioned in these times?
Again, every BDC has got a different set of assets because we're relatively small. So we're not necessarily representative of the entire smaller middle market economy. A big chunk of our portfolio, for example, is focused on software as a service, SaaS businesses. And those businesses, depending on the sector they serve, were largely not impacted by the downturn, you know, because they're a subscription, they're mission-critical software, installed base. You know, they were not the things that any of these companies were going to cancel. So that part of our business was able to ride through it. We had some travel-related things that had some gaps in their earnings, if you will, but all that stuff got covered over and recovered. So we basically had zero COVID-related credit events. We wrote our portfolio down substantially when COVID hit, and then we wound up unwinding all that write down over the ensuing 12 to 15 months. So it really depends on what the sector is that the BDC invests in. And one of the ways to tell the credit characteristics and credit quality of the BDC's investment is just to look at their return on equity over, you know, the past period of time. And our return on equity is low teens for, you know, the last 5 years, 8 years. So we've had a very consistent double-digit return on equity performance over the past years. We think that's probably the most important test of how credit decisions have been made and what the results are.
I have long said that good money managers, good stewards of capital, understand the role that they're hoping to play in an investor's portfolio. And while, yes, obviously you run a BDC, you are talking the book to some extent. What it also sounds like, especially as you're talking about credit quality and the way that different BDCs are going to be into different things, is that for somebody who's looking at BDCs generally, they might want to own more than one. That this is not like, okay, hey, I'm looking for income, so I'll buy a BDC. It's more like I want to have this kind of asset, and I maybe want to diversify and have a couple of players in that portion of my portfolio. Is that how you would hope that at least the more average investors would be looking at something like Saratoga?
Yes, I think that's, you know, very well said on your part. So fundamentally, let's just take, you know, like so many brokers, you ask them, investment advisors, what should I do? They go, okay, 60% equity, 40%, say fixed income, they say income oriented, they say something like that, right? So let's focus on the 40%. What should you own in the 40%? If you own municipal bonds, not only is the absolute rate quite low, you know, they're fixed income, right? And you own treasuries, if you own corporate bonds, all of that is a fixed income number. So, you know, the 10-year treasury has gone up a whole lot. The rate's gone up, and therefore the value of the treasury has gone down. So some portion of that 40%, and I'm not saying all 40%, but some portion of that is your income-oriented investing. And so you should take some portion of that, and let's just for discussion purposes say 10 points of the 40 points. And you should say, look, I want that in a solid income-producing portfolio that is well-structured to absorb a rising rate environment, which it kind of looks like we're headed into. Maybe we're not, but it kind of looks like we have. And there have been a lot of false starts over the years, right? This has been coming for a long time, but maybe it really is here now. So you take that portion and say, okay, we're going to invest in BDCs. But now BDCs are yielding anywhere from 7 to 10%. So the absolute yield is quite high. Plus, as rates rise, you know, because of the floating asset characteristics of them, that yield is going to increase. So some portion of your income-oriented portfolio should absolutely have BDCs as a component. And what BDCs do, you know, it's a flow-through vehicle. There's no taxation at the BDC level. What it does is it's an enabler, right? So you have a liquid investment. If it's a stock, you can buy and sell 25 times a day if you want to. So you can get in and out of it. But the assets that the BDC invests in are private credit investments to smaller businesses. So those smaller businesses have to pay higher rates. And that's why you can get 7 or 8, 9% yield on a BDC, is because they're lending to these companies that don't have the same access the credit as a lot of the larger, you know, General Motors, you try General Motors bond, you're probably getting paid 1.5%. So they provide a higher absolute yield. They give you an exposure to the smaller middle market, private credit market. It's still first lien and still senior secured lending, but higher rate secured. So absolutely some portion of your income should be focused on BDCs. And yes, you're right. You should probably own more than one. I think one has to be careful on the index side of it, because there is a BDC index that can be bought. Look carefully at it. But what happens with the index is it skews towards the very largest BDCs. And sometimes the very largest BDCs don't have the best performance. So a better way to go about it, in my view, would be rank all the BDCs by return on equity over the last 3 to 5 years and pick the top 10% of the field and, you know, own sort of a basket of those.
Chris, great stuff. Thank you so much for joining me to talk about it.
Excellent. Thank you for having me.
The Navigator is a joint production of the Active Investment Company Alliance and Money Life with Chuck Jaffe. That's me, and you can check out my show on your favorite podcast app or at moneylifeshow.com. To learn more about business development companies, interval funds, and closed-end funds, go to AICAlliance.org, the website for the Active Investment Company Alliance, on Facebook and LinkedIn at AIC Alliance. Thanks to my guest, Chris Oberbeck, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer at Saratoga Investment Corp. Learn more about the firm online at saratogainvestmentcorp.com and follow Chris on Twitter, where he's at Chris Oberbeck. The Navigator podcast is new every Friday. Ensure you don't miss anything by subscribing via your favorite podcast app. And if you like us, please leave a review, because they really do help. Until next week, happy investing, everybody.